Hey everybody, welcome back to A Survival Guide for Christian Men. My name is Brian, and I'm happy that you stuck with the program and came back and listened to me. I'm very, very sorry about the very long break, and I will be, I'll discuss that more at the end of the show so that I'm not taking up a ton of time here at the beginning. But anyway, my name is Brian, and this is a podcast for men to talk about Christian masculinity and how to get there and how to live it out and how to get other men excited about it. First thing I want to talk about today is I'm very, very excited about Promise Keepers 2013. I'm so thankful that they sent me a press pass, including two tickets for me and my son to attend the Battle Creek Conference. If you live in the Michigan area and would like to go to Promise Keepers, I would love to meet you and shake your hand. The date on that is August 23rd and 24th. So I guess you could tweet me. I get my tweets as text messages, and you can let me know you're there and where you're at, and we can try to meet up. My new Twitter address is Brian Carruthers. You can get all that information on the show notes. Anyway, the Promise Keepers event, they've got two or four more this year. I'm sorry. anyway, Cedar Falls, Iowa is July 19th. Battle Creek, Michigan is August 23rd and 24th. Tulsa, Oklahoma is September 20th through the 21st. Daytona Beach, Florida is October 25th and 26th. They've already had two dates in Phoenix and Nashville. Those are already passed. I'm sorry I didn't get this information out to you sooner. Anyway, I want to plug a little promo video in right here. You'll just get the audio, but you can go to the show notes, or actually you can go to my Promise Keepers page and get all the information on Promise Keepers. You can get there by going to pbnjnetwork.com/PK. So anyway, here's a little audio from promo from Promise Keepers.
You're old enough to know the truth. There's a warrior inside you. One day you're going to fight battles of your own. Battles aren't against flesh and blood, but principalities and darkness. Don't take your enemy lightly. You'll have to fight for your family, your home, your marriage. Other men have fought these battles and lost. But once you realize what power is in your hands, you'll understand you can win every battle. Always remember, son, you are a warrior.
I'm talking to warriors. Only you might not know you're a warrior. You might not even know you're in the middle of a war, but you are. Make no mistake. We don't fight against men, but we fight against spiritual powers. I'm not talking about a devil behind every bush. I'm talking about the daily grind of life that tries to conform you to the image of the world. Our neighbors are counting on us. Our churches are counting on us. Our families are counting on us. Today's our day. What we do in this hour is our legacy. The next generation is counting on us. We're not average men. We're warriors. We're sons of God. We're men of the word. We have no chance unless we hear and obey the word of God. This year, Promise Keepers is calling out warriors. It's time to rouse from the slumber that besets us. It's time to take on the battle. It's time to use the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. I'm calling you out to be courageous, to establish
relationships in the body of Christ and to maintain those relationships and to recognize what your position and what relationships established in heaven, and you have to live them out on earth.
You know what this is? This is the knock of Jesus Christ. It's your life. He's trying to break through. He's trying to come in. The question is, will you respond?
So if you want a better world, composed of better countries, inhabited by better states, because they're made up of better counties, composed of better cities, inhabited by better neighborhoods, illuminated by better churches that are made up of better families, you got to start by becoming a better man. You see, it always starts where you are.
These arms will not go down if we walk together. Stand next to your brother right now. Lift up his arm. Lift up his shoulder. Tell him you're not alone.
Now, here's what Dad says. I love you, and I'm sorry you're in pain, son, but I'm here, and I'll die with you. Now you get out there and get back in the game. That's what a warrior does. That's what a dad does. And I give that to you.
All right, man, that is going to get you fired up. If you guys, if you have a group of guys or even yourself and your son, you got to make it to this event. I went when they were here in Michigan probably 3-4 years ago in Grand Rapids, and it fires you up. I'm telling you, you get a bunch of guys, and the most amazing thing I like is just being in a stadium and worshiping with men. Just the male singing voices all together. It just really ushers me in, and I really enjoy it. The speakers are awesome. You couldn't ask for more. There's great music. Anyway, all that information is on pbnjnetwork.com/PK. Go there, get 10 guys or more, and you get a discount on your tickets. So check it out, guys. I really, really encourage you. And I want to hear about your experience there, too. So get hold of me and let me know that. So today we are continuing our Wild at Heart dissection, and we are in Chapter 5. I know last week, or the last episode, it wasn't last week, it was quite a long time ago. The last episode was very difficult, so I'm hoping this one won't be so bad. So Chapter 5 is The Battle for a Man's Heart. And the first quote here is, "To give a man's heart back is the hardest mission on earth." And that's from the movie Michael. Sometimes secular movies have some really, really good stuff in them. Okay, getting your bearings. The goal of this chapter is to see the emasculation you've endured, to uncover the famished craving you have for validation, and to reveal where you've taken that craving in hopes of, for an answer. The reason is that we're about to seek the answer God has for us, but it cannot come, and we cannot understand His way with us until we see clearly where He's taken our hearts. The trail markers are the assault on a man continues throughout his life, and its effect is emasculation. That assault is far more premeditated than most of us thought. The result is a famished craving in the soul. Our desperate desire is validation as a man. We take our search many places, but eventually we all take it to the woman. I forgot to mention, this is Wild at Heart. It is a book by John Eldridge and Ransom Heart Ministries, and they've graciously given me permission to quote out of these books. Most of what I'll be going through is the Wild at Heart Field Manual. You can find links to that in the show notes, and the show notes for this podcast are at pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM019. So, on we go. Stepping out. What was your reaction to my telling Blaine to get up and hit the bully as hard as he possibly could? Are you delighted with it or appalled, and why? Part of the Wild at Heart book is he one day his John Eldridge's son was at dinner and he was looking very sad and defeated. And the Eldridges finally got it out of their son, Blaine, that there was a bully at school and the bully was pushing him down. And John told him the next time that, you know, that bully pushes you down, you get up and you hit him as hard as you can. And so, you know, what my reaction to that is, you know, I agree. I don't believe that you can, you know, take the strength away from a boy and expect him to find his strength. When my son was in preschool, there was a situation similar to this, and there was a bully picking on one of my son's friends, and the bully pushed the kid down, and my son stepped in and pushed the other boy, the bully, and my son got in trouble for it. He got a timeout, and, you know, we got a talking to once we got there, and I told the daycare lady that, you know, I asked her, I said, do you really expect me to punish my son for doing the right thing? You know, you can punish my son. You know, this is your rules here, but I'm going to explain to my son that sometimes he's going to get in trouble for doing the right thing. And that shouldn't stop him from doing the right thing. So I explained to him that he was pretty much a hero that day. And he's had other moments like that since then. Has anyone done for you what I did for Blaine? Intervene at a crucial moment when your soul was hanging in the balance and invite you to be dangerous? And if the answer is no, what is the message of that? I think my parents kind of inaudibly gave us permission to kind of live this out. You know, if there was a bully, of course things were a lot different, you know, 35 years ago. But if there's a bully, you stand up to him. You know. So, like I said, you know, things were a lot different 35 years ago. Consequences now are a lot different. You know, you just didn't hear a lot about shootings, school shootings 35 years ago. And it's usually the not the bullies that are doing the shooting, you know. But anyway, yeah, I do think I had that permission. It wasn't a direct permission, but I think I did have that. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. That was just a quote that was in here. I thought it was pretty good. The assault on our masculine heart continues long after the wound is given. And remember, a man is not wounded once, but many times throughout the course of his life. Nearly every blow falls in the same place, as an attack on his strength. Life takes it away, one vertebra at a time, until he has no spine left at all. Can you recall other assaults you've endured over the years? To start with, what wounds did you receive at school? Was that a deeply affirming place of your masculine strength? Were you taunted on the playground? Did they have a name for you? Yeah, I was picked on quite a bit when I was a kid. Not physically, but I was kind of a nerd, kind of a geek, and that's back then. It wasn't as cool as it is now to be a geek. I kind of wish I was a kid in today's world. I'd kind of fit right in. But anyway. Yeah, they picked on me quite a bit. I was kind of a loner and kind of avoided kids. I was the kind of kid who waited for other kids to approach me and be friends with me, and it just never happened. So I was alone a lot. What about among your friends? Have they been loyal and affirming? I did have some loyal friends, a couple in school. I don't remember a lot of my childhood, as I've mentioned, but I do remember having a couple of good friends. And at work, are you honored there as a man of strength? Have you ever been stripped of power or position? Are you invited to speak your mind freely? What price have you paid for job security? At work, you know, everyone knows I'm a Christian. They see the life I live and just the lack of, you know, foul language and crude talk says a lot as far as your integrity, because it's kind of expected that you talk that way. The crude jokes and just things like that. So when you don't do that, you know, they notice pretty quickly that something's different about you. People do trust me in that respect. I think I do get some respect that, you know, towards their that. And if people have a problem that they feel is spiritual, they'll come to me with questions. So that's pretty cool. What about in marriage? Does your wife encourage you to be dangerous, to seek adventure, to take risks? Give an example or two. My wife does. She really does encourage me to be dangerous and to live out, you know, this seeking of Christian masculinity. She encourages me to, you know, find my heart. And she's walking through some troubles that I'm having with my biological father. Speaking of which, I had to write a letter to my biological father, and I put it in the form of a open letter, because he commented on a Facebook post of mine and was kind of threw our relationship out there in the public, and I decided to make a public response. So I wrote an open letter to my biological father, and I will put a link to that in the show notes, because it's actually on my personal website, RyanCarruthers.com. So look for that. It's called a letter to my biological father. It's kind of wordy, but it's a really good read, and I've got a lot of good feedback from it. So go ahead and go read that. Maybe I'll read that in a podcast someday. All right. And how might she have tried to tame you over the years? My wife likes to edit me when I talk. She's always careful to, when I have interactions on Facebook or things, when it has to do with her relatives, she likes to edit me. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I can't be myself. And we've had discussions about this, and she understands, and she tries really hard not to do that. But at the same time, I can be very blunt and very kind of in your face, kind of, you know, right is right, or, you know, very black and white kind of person. So she is very sensitive about the feelings of others when it comes to me not offending anybody. So, you know, she tries to edit me, and, you know, it kind of hurts a little bit, but she's aware of it, and she tries not to do it. So, all right. The world is unnerved by a truly masculine man, and so it tries to socialize men away from all that is fierce and wild and passionate. Yet God made men the way they are because we need them to be the way they are. As Christina Hoff Sommers said, the energy, competitiveness, and corporal daring of normal, decent males is responsible for much of what is right in the world. I cited the safety of a neighborhood, or the bringing down of slavery, or the men who gave their places on the lifeboats of the Titanic. Can you name a few examples of where the nature of men is exactly... Can you name a few examples of where the nature of men is exactly what the world has needed? Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, look at the military. We have a volunteer military here in the United States. I think that just that alone says so much. And I know there's women in the military, and, you know, I want to honor them too. I want to thank them. But, you know, obviously, most of our military is male. But just that alone, just the fact that the volunteer military and these men and women are willing to just lay down their lives for the freedom of others, that strength alone, you know, says so much. And, you know, certain politicians, you know, at work I hear so much about every politician is crooked and all this. And I'm like, you know, you just really can't stereotype like that. You know, there are some politicians who are really trying to do the right thing. And they, you know, I might not agree with their politics. You know, they might be liberals, but they believe they're really trying to do the right thing. And it's not because of greed. You know, they're not looking for handouts. My local congressman is a great guy. I've met him, you know, on a few occasions, and he's gone to our church, and he's just a really great guy. He's really down to earth. He's authentic. He's a Christian. He's just a strong man, and I really appreciate what he's doing in Washington. You know, I keep an eye on him, on his voting record. I follow him on Twitter, and and I would just like to say, you know, thank you, you know, Mr. Wahlberg, for that. So those are just a couple examples. All right, I used the example of a scalpel and a stallion, how the danger is part of their goodness. In the case of the scalpel, you cannot heal unless it is dangerous. In the case of the stallion, you cannot ever have life, foster new life, unless you have the danger. What might be different in your world if you were far more dangerous? And who in your life is encouraging you to be that way? I just want to go into a little more the scalpel and the stallion. He's talking about, you know, if you a scalpel can be a dangerous thing for good or bad. But if you want, if a surgeon wants to heal somebody, they have to have that danger in their hand, and it has to be sharp, and he has to be able to cut with it. But it's for good. It's to heal. And the stallion he's talking about is, you know, it's a powerful horse, and, you know, a stallion gives life. But you can't have, you know, if you want to tame that stallion, because, you know, they says, you know, stallions are very wild and hard to control. But if you want to control that power, you have to take away its ability to give life. So, says, what might be different in your world if you were far more dangerous? If I were far more dangerous, you know, I'd be taking a lot more risks. I'd be behind this microphone more often. I'd be getting over my fear of talking about, you know, these subjects, you know, of delving into my own personal wounds and, you know, getting out there for the world to hear. I need to do that. I, you know, you guys need me to be more dangerous. And I've had, you know, guys encouraging me to do that. You know, I've heard time and time again that this podcast is very important. And I've had so many guys encouraging me to keep going, keep going. You know, we need you. You know, when's the next episode? And I'd especially like to thank the guys at Solomon's Porch Radio, Mike and Mark. They're really an encouragement to me. And I just would really like to thank them for that. So go check them out at Solomon's Porch Radio. All right, what's going on here anyway? Let's take a look around you. What do you observe? What do you see in the lives of the men with you, with the men that you work with, live by, go to church alongside? Are they full of passionate freedom? Do they fight well? Are their women deeply grateful for how well their men have loved them? Are their children radiant with affirmation? Think of the men you know, or at least work with or live near. Place their names in one of the following three categories. All right, so let's back up. Take a look around you. What do you observe? What do you see from in the lives of the men that you work with. The men that I work with, you know, there's a couple guys that are, you know, really strong Christians and that I'd like to hang out with and I'd like to be closer to. But for the most part, they're just boys walking around in grown-up bodies. It's basically what it is. You know, even some of the ones that think they're super smart and mature, they're just kids, you know. That's about it. So, the men that I live by, in my neighborhood, I hate to point fingers, but this is a funny story. My neighbor, I'm not going to name his name, but his front yard is just immaculate. He's got the in-ground sprinklers and he mows like every other day. And, you know, it's just every blade of grass is the exact same length. And it just makes my yard look like a sand lot, you know. But if you peek over the fence in my backyard and see his backyard, it's night and day. And it just kind of reminds me of the story of, you know, in the Bible where Jesus is telling the Pharisees that they clean the outside of the cup, but they don't clean the inside of the cup. You know, you clean up the part that everyone sees, but inside you're full of dead man's bones. And his backyard just kind of tells that to me, that, you know, you're worried about curb appeal. I guess that's what you'd call it. You know, your curb appeal is awesome, but let's look inside. You know, let's look a little deeper. So, you know, my neighbor, he's a good guy. He's a good enough guy. He's made some bad decisions in his life. He's a good neighbor. You know, we get along. It's just funny, though. It's just funny to look at his yard. And, I mean, yeah, his front yard makes mine look horrible, you know, but, you know, where are my priorities? You know, where's his priorities? You know, my priority is not mowing my lawn. You know, I've got different priorities. So there you go. And I don't mean to judge. I like the guy. I mean, okay, now go to church. Now the men that I go to church alongside, the guys that go to church alongside, they're great. And some of them have really stepped up. Some of them have come to my son's rite of passage ceremony, and they've stepped up and said, "Yeah, Joe, we're gonna, you know, walk through this manhood thing with you, and, you know, we're gonna hold you accountable, and we're gonna teach you and train you, and pray with you, and lift you up, and, you know, all of this," and that's great. But, you know, most of the guys, it's sports and cars and motorcycles and. What's the point of that? You know, there's not a real band of brothers. You know, me and a friend of mine, Mike Rogers. I love the guy dearly. We meet every Saturday morning at a local restaurant here, and for coffee. And we're trying to start a little men's group. And we're keep inviting other guys. And, you know, hey, you know, come Saturday morning and have coffee, and we'll just talk about, you know, our lives, and we'll get, you know, into each other's lives and start a little band of brothers. And Mike is the only one interested, and it's just discouraging. It really is. I know we wanted to have it at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is early, but there's a purpose for that. You know, we wanted to have our little coffee and talk and have enough time to do that, and then get back home before our wives and kids get out of bed, you know, so that we're not missed. That's the reason for that. So a lot of guys are like, "Oh, 6 o'clock is so early." But you know what? What are you doing? You know, what are you doing Friday night? You're staying up so late. You know, is it not worth you know, getting up. I mean, how many real, really, really close friends do you have? So it's really discouraging that even the guys in my church, you know, can't get excited about a band of brothers, you know, when somebody's begging them to join up. And we've had men's groups in the past just fall apart. It's discouraging. Anyway, I got to keep going. Where was I? Okay. So you can place some of the names in these three categories for yourself. They have lost heart, given up, been taken out. They are wounded men, and though trying, they can't seem to get up. Or they are among the captives to what? Okay. Next part. I said that this is a battlefield, that we are at war, that in fact we are in the last stages of a long and vicious war against the human heart. Did that sound a bit too dramatic for you? What have you understood the situation to be? Did you write it off to culture or upbringing or bad luck? You know, yeah, we are at war, you know, and for some people that just, they just poo-poo that because, oh, spiritual warfare, blah, whatever. But it's really true, and families are right on the front line of that war. I mean, look at our culture. You know, the Supreme Court just, here in America, the Supreme Court has, you know, just overturned the Defense of Marriage Act. And, you know, we have a president who campaigned as being, you know, pro-marriage. You know, he was for, you know, he believed in one man, one woman. And now that he's on his last term, he has nothing to lose. He's done a complete 180. You know, how is that integrity? No. You know, it's an attack on the family. You know, look at the pornography rates today. Look at the divorce rates. Even in the church, I think I heard somewhere that the divorce rates in the church are higher than outside the church now. It's, you know, if that's true, that's just horrible. You know, what does that say to the world? You know, the church has nothing to offer. Christianity has nothing to offer them. But it really, really does, you know. So, have you ever conceived of life as a war? Have you ever looked at, you know, your life as a war? Have you ever looked at yourself as being a part of a war? Even being just a bystander, you know. Whether you want to be or not, you're in a war. You can choose to pick up a sword, or you can choose to just stand by and take a stray bullet. You know, that's up to you. But I would suggest that you pick up a sword, you know, and start swinging the thing. You know, because you are dangerous. You were created to fight in this war. So, and if you don't believe you're in a war, pick up your Bible. From, you know, page one to the last page, you're in a war, dude. I mean, come on, there's no denying that. If you say you don't believe that part of the Bible, then you don't believe any part of the Bible. You know, I hate to be blunt there, but that's the truth. You know, you take the whole thing, you take nothing. Had you noticed the deadly accuracy of the wounds you've been given? What have your wounds prevented you from doing in your life? Have you followed your dreams? Are you doing what you want to do with your life when you were a young man? Have you noticed that the accuracy of your wounds? I think I've talked about this before when I've been talking about this book, is your wounds are given in the point of your strength. You know, if you have a purpose, if God has put a purpose in your life, that's where your wounds are going to go, because the devil wants to take you out at your greatest strength. Because you know what? He's afraid of you. He's afraid of what you could do if you actually decided to pursue your strength. You know, there's a reason why, you know, you're struggling with pornography, or there's a reason why you're constantly fighting with your wife or your kids, or you're struggling with alcohol, or, you know, any of these things, gambling, you know, because, you know, you're being wounded in your biggest strength, your greatest strength. Alright, the wounds you have taken were leveled against us with stunning accuracy. Did it occur to you that all those wounds were aimed, that they were not random but intentional? Does it seem to make a bit more sense now, or do you still sound, or do I still sound like a reactionary or a bit overly dramatic? Yeah, I think I just talked about that, you know. Those wounds, you know, the devil has very, very good aim with those arrows, I'm telling you. He knows that you have something to fear, and that's where he's aiming at. He's got you in his crosshairs, man. Alright, hopefully you're getting the picture. Do you know why there has been such an assault? The enemy fears you. You are dangerous big time. If you ever really got your heart back, lived from it with courage, you would be a huge problem to him. You would do a lot of damage on the side of good. Remember how valiant and effective God has been in the history of the world. You are a stem of that victorious stalk. How does that strike you? What if it were true? You know, you might poo-poo this whole warfare thing and what good you could actually do if you were to, you know, stand up and make a difference. But what if it were true? What if all this, you know, war babble that I'm talking, what if all this healing your heart and picking up your sword, you know, nonsense was actually true? What would you do? What if you decided to look into it, open up your Bible and start reading? What if you found out that it's actually true? What would you do? All right. Once again, I want to tell you as clearly as I can that you can get your heart back. But I also warned you, if you want your heart back, if you want the wound healed and your strength restored and to find your true name, you're going to have to fight for it. Notice your reaction to my words. Does not something in you stir a little, a yearning to live? And doesn't another voice rush in, urging caution, maybe wanting to dismiss me altogether? He's being melodramatic. What arrogance. Or maybe some guys could, but not me. Or, I don't know, is it really worth it? Do you see the battle in your reaction? You know, what is your reaction when I say, you know, you can get your heart back. You can fight for it. You can fight for your wife's heart. You can fight for your children's heart. You know, you can do this. You have what it takes. What is your reaction to that? You know, take a look at that. Take a look at your reaction. You know, examine that. All right, our search for an answer. The bottom line is this. We still need to know what we never heard or heard so badly from our fathers. We need to know who we are and if we have what it takes. What do we do now with that ultimate question? Where do we go to find an answer? In order to help you find the answer to the question, let me ask you another. What have you done with your question? Where have you taken it? You see, a man's core question does not go away. He may try for years to shove it out of his awareness and just get on with his life, but it does not go away. It is a hunger so essential to our soul that it will compel us to find a resolution. In truth, it drives everything we do. Do you see it driving you? In what ways? Peter chose financial success. Brad chose belonging to the group. Where in your life are you looking for the answer to your question? You know, where are you looking? You know, what is your question? First you gotta find that out. What is your question? Do I have what it takes? Are you going to work? Are you a workaholic? Are you, you know, heavy into sports? You know, are you spending a lot of time, if you're married, are you spending a lot of time away from your wife and kids trying to prove something? You know, I'm here to tell you right now, you have what it takes. And if you don't think you have what it takes, call me. Call this podcast and I will tell you, you have what it takes. You know, I'll tell you right now, the number, we're changing up the number. We're going to have the same number for all the podcasts on the PB&J Network. So you can call 406-272-2635. Call me. Tell me. Explain to me why you don't have what it takes. And I'll explain to you why you do. All right? All right, another way of asking this, what would it take, what would it feel like? All right, hold on. Another way of asking this is, what would it feel like death to lose or know you will never, ever attain? So if you had something and you lost it, you would just feel like you died. That's what it's trying to say. Or to know what you could never, ever attain. Where does most of the energy of your life get spent in a normal week? And why are you spending it there? Do you spend most of your time, you know, at work? Are you working 80, 90 hours a week? Do you spend most of your time out in your garage just tinkering with stuff to get away from your wife and kids? Are you spending most of your time on your computer or in front of the TV? Or are you spending most of your time with your family? You know, are you doing the right things? You know, that's the questions you got to ask. All right, the golden-haired woman. Why is pornography more addictive for men than heroin? Because that seductive beauty reaches down inside and touches your desperate hunger for validation as a man you didn't even know you had. Touches it like nothing else most men have ever experienced. You must understand, this is deeper than legs and breasts and good sex. This may be the biggest revelation a man comes to about the beauty, that his struggle with her is not about sex, but about validation. Let me ask you now about the fantasy woman, the woman in your daydreams, the woman who makes Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, or perhaps the woman you are looking at or talking to on the internet. When you are looking at her, what does it feel like? What does it feel like she is saying to you? You know, pornography is huge, and I've admitted before that I struggle with it. You know, I really, really do, and I always have. I'm getting a handle on it, though, and I want to tell you real quick. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but you go to if you go to pbnjnetwork.com/eyes, you'll learn about Covenant Eyes. It's an internet filtering and accountability software. So go there real quick and check that out. It's an affiliate program, and you'll be helping out this podcast if you join up. But anyway, when you look at her, what does it feel like she is saying to you? I don't know. I'm going to cut that part out. How does she make you feel as a man? When you look at other women, you know, how does she make you feel like a man, even if she's not talking to you? You know, because pornography is just women giving themselves to everybody. You know, you don't have to work for it. You don't have to be, you know, a real man. You don't have to have accountability. You don't have to make sacrifices. You just got to hit the on button, you know, on the computer. But how does that make you feel as a man? You know, if you were to think about that, if you don't have to be a man to win the golden hair beauty on the internet, how does that make you feel as a man? Does it make you feel like a man when you don't have to be a man? All right. And after the pornographic affair is over, how do you feel then? Did it satisfy, meaning you never need to go back because you have an answer to your question? We've got to be honest about two things. First, Eve is a garden of delight, Psalms 4:16. Man, oh man, is she. Femininity can really arouse masculinity, no question about it. But I'm sorry, Mr. Springsteen, she's not everything you want, everything you need, not even close. Of course, it will stay a million miles away. You can't get there from here because it's not there. It's not there. The answer to your question can never, ever be found there. Has that ever really sunk into you? Let it now. Put your pen down and just sit with this thought for a few minutes. I will never find what I'm looking for in a woman. What happens in your heart as you allow that to be true? Is it sadness, emptiness, relief? I want to explore that right there. I will never find what I'm looking for in a woman. There's a guy at our church. He's a great guy. He's a new convert to Christianity, and he's had a rough life. I've tried to befriend him. He never seemed interested. I wanted to mentor him. I was asked to mentor him, but he just never quite bit. Anyway, I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he'll get on there, and he's so many posts about how I love God and God's so great and all this blah blah blah, and you could tell it's from a new Christian because it's basically pouring out of his heart. There's no church talk in it at all, because he doesn't know it yet, which is great because you can tell it's just pouring out of his heart. But there's other posts where he says, I need a woman, I'm so lonely, and I'm just sitting here crying, and I'm so lonely, and I want to just reach out and shake him and say, no, you don't need a woman. You need men. You need men in your life, dude. Single guys, I want to talk to single guys right now. Single guys, you don't need a woman, all right? I know sometimes, most of the time, you probably feel like you do, because your hormones are just out of control. But you need to get around men. You need to constantly, as much as you can, get around good Christian men. Ask them to mentor you. Ask them to just hang around with you and keep you accountable and, fill yourself with that masculinity. Just soak it in. You really need that. You just do not need a woman. And if you find a woman before you find yourself and get your heart back, are you really giving her everything you can? She deserves a full, restored man. If you think about your future wife, give her what she deserves and, focus on your masculinity first before you seek a woman, okay? All right, I confessed in a previous book, the major revelation I came to one day about the beauty, because it bears on this issue so directly, permit me to repeat it here. I was walking down the hall at work one day, lost in my thoughts. Walking ahead of me, the same direction I was going, was a beautiful woman. I looked up and my heart said, wow. Fearing that the beast of lust was rearing its ugly head, I tried to kill my reaction. It never works, and I knew it. So I decided instead to find out what was going on beneath what seemed to be an inappropriate response. Still walking along with this beauty still in view, I asked my heart, what do you mean by wow? The next sentence literally popped out, unscripted, from someplace deep inside me. The grand prize, if you are truly a man. I was stunned. I have lived that lie for a long time. How long? How many young boys in our culture, just as they are entering adolescence, are introduced to sexuality as masculinity? Look at every ad designed for men, whether it's for cars or sporting gear, clothes or beer. There is almost always a beautiful siren posing seductively alongside. The message is beaten into us, if you're a man, you'll win the woman. I saw how long I had been haunted by that idea. I also saw that what I was desiring was not an affair, but a truer sense of my own masculinity. That's from The Journey of Desire. All right, one last part here. It's called On Homosexuality. I said that homosexual men are actually more clear on this point, that they know what is missing in their hearts is masculine love. The problem is that they sexualized it. Joseph Nicolsi says that homosexuality is an attempt to repair the wound by filling it with masculinity, either the masculine love that was missing or the masculine strength many men feel they do not possess. It too is a vain search, and that is why the overwhelming number of homosexual relationships do not last. why so many gay men move from one man to another, and why so many of them suffer from depression and a host of other addictions. What they need cannot be found there. Why have I said all this about our search for validation and the answer to our question? Because we cannot hear the real answer until we see we've got a false one. As long as we chase the illusion, how can we face reality? The hunger is there. It lives in our souls like a famished craving, no matter what we try to fill it with. If we take our question to Eve, it will break your heart. I know this now after many hard years. You cannot get your answer there. In fact, you cannot get your answer from any of the things men chase after to find their sense of self. There is only one source for the answer to your question. And so, no matter where you've taken your question, you've got to take it back. You have to walk away. Will you? How? And when? What will you give up in order to find the real thing? There's a prayer here at the end from A.W. Tozer from The Pursuit of God. Father, I want to know you, but my coward heart fears to give up its toys. I cannot part with them without inward bleeding. I do not try to hide from you the terror of the parting. I come trembling, but I do come. Please root from my heart all those things which I have cherished so long and which have become a very part of my living self, so that you may enter and dwell there without a rival. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so that is chapter 5 of the Wild at Heart Field Manual. So next episode will be chapter 6, The Father's Voice. And I will try to get that out a little quicker than the last one. So to wrap up, all the show notes and all the links and all the videos that I've talked about are on, you can go to pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM. You can find links to my Facebook, the Facebook page for this program, my Twitter, my email, the phone number for the podcast, all that stuff you'll find right there. And I encourage you to click on every single link. So you can find links to the books, the Wild at Heart book and the Wild at Heart Field Manual at pbnjnetwork.com/wildatheart. And that's about it for that. I'm going to talk about some personal stuff and some kind of business stuff now. So if you are not interested in that, I guess you can tune out. And I look forward to talking to you next time. And thank you for joining me on A Survival Guide for Christian Men. My name is Brian, and I will see you next time. Goodbye. All right, so all the guys that are left, I just want to explain what's going on and why it took so long to get this episode out, or part of the reason why it took so long to get this episode out. Part of the reason why is because of some website technical issues I've been dealing with. There's been something called a brute force attack. Basically, it's people trying to crash WordPress websites, and the free server that I currently use to host this website is really, really under attack, and I've been struggling with keeping the website up. What I'm trying to say is I want to have a call out to you to help me get away from the free service and onto a paid service. The paid service is only, I think, $5 a month, but the problem is you have to pay for 3 years up front, and it comes to like $180, and it's just really not in the household budget right now. So I guess I'm asking for your support. Any little help will really help out. I'm going to set up a link to my PayPal account in the show notes for this page, and it's at pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM. You know, if you can put $5, you know, in there, and it will all go towards this podcast. I won't. None of that will go towards personal expenses. You'll be helping other guys around the world get this message. If you really believe in this message, if you really think that this is an important podcast to keep going and to have fewer distractions of, you know, these technical issues, then please help out. And you know, this is not a nonprofit, so unfortunately there's no tax write-off. So if you go to the show notes, or if you go to pbnjnetwork.com/support, you can help get the word out about this podcast and the other podcasts on the network by sharing on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and all those great outlets. So I guess that's what I want to say. Again, guys, check out the Promise Keepers page at pbjnetwork.com/pk. So I will be coming back to you next time with Chapter 6 of Father's Voice from Wild Heart, and that will be Episode 20. I know it's been so long. I've been having this podcast. I'm only on episode 20. It's so embarrassing. But I really, really, really want to make a go at relaunching this podcast, and I want to start setting up some interviews with some ministry leaders, some men's ministry speakers. I'd like to set up some interviews, and hopefully at this Promise Keepers event, I can interview some of the speakers. I would so love that. That would be so awesome. So if you're a speaker at Promise Keepers and you're listening to this, call me. I want to interview you for my show. You know, let's talk about Promise Keepers. Let's get guys excited about that. And if you have ties to men's ministry public speaker, let me know. You know, I want to talk to them. You know, or a men's ministry leader, you know, at your church. You know, if your men's ministry is growing and on fire and you've got guys fired up, I want to talk to you about it. So, you know, the phone number there again is 406-272-2635. I got to get out of here. I'm looking at an hour of podcasting. So I will see you next time on Survive a God for Christian Man.